sell women's shoes.
And the Stallion.
Stallion, baby!
I am not what you would call a handsome man.
I'll kick you in the nuts and you'll smile at me and like it.
All night long.
We're back with the, let's call it the new era of the All Night Long Wrestling Podcast, like the WWE does. Let's just steal that right from them. No, I don't want, no. We're the same old guys. Everybody can walk around and they can start chanting, same old stuff, same old stuff.
Should we air a Becky Lynch versus Natalya match live on air? Would that get some, listeners if that we did that?
3 days at the pay-per-view? Sure, let's do that. We're back. It's episode 421, if this ticker is right. I still am. I'm the enforcer. He's a Stallion. And we're sitting here. We just finished SmackDown live.
It's SmackDown live.
There's a lot of stuff to get to this week. We saw Battleground. We saw Raw. And then we saw SmackDown live. So you want to go chronologically?
I think chronologically is the way to go.
Yeah. All right, so let's start SmackDown. No, I'm just kidding. I think we'll start with a little WWE Battleground. How do you want it? Do you want to go match by match? What do you want to do?
Well, we can hit the high points, I would say. I don't know if you want to get into Breezango versus the Usos. I don't know if that's something that interests you or not.
No, not really. All right,
that's fair.
I do feel bad for the Usos, though.
Why?
As the kids say, they're taking L's left and right.
That means losses.
That means losses. Okay. Yeah, it's they're really. I think since Roman is in the doghouse, the Usos are now also in the doghouse
by proxy. Yeah.
By proxy, yeah. What does that mean?
As a result of them being affiliated to Roman, they are Roman being in the doghouse. They are then also in the doghouse.
Okay, so then do you suck by proxy? Because that could be affiliated. Wait. And I suck.
No, that's not
so
how
does that mean you suck?
No, it doesn't work that way.
Oh.
You don't suck. I think we need to establish
that. No, I suck.
We need to make
I'm
sure.
I'm old and I suck. And, according to the opening, I sell women's shoes. I just feel bad for the Usos taking another loss. They haven't been on TV in a couple weeks anyway, right?
No, I think ever since the Roman versus AJ feud ended and they were doing the club versus the bloodline. After that ended, they kind of fell out of the picture, and then he got suspended for 30 days, and they fell further out of the picture.
Hold on. Did they get suspended by proxy?
No. Shit. I don't know if that works. I don't think it works that way.
Anyway.
So Breezango
wins, and that
Breezango wins.
That was the first night before the roster split. So they got drafted together, and the Usos got drafted together, so you'll see more of them. That leads into the first match of Battleground, which I have a little bit of an issue with. It was Sasha Banks and a mystery opponent against Charlotte and I'm drawing a blank here. Charlotte, what's her name?
Charlotte and Dana Brooke.
Thank you, Dana Brooke. Sasha Banks went out of her way to mention on Twitter how her tag team partner will not be Bayley. I feel like that was poor form for her to even acknowledge it. I don't know, maybe just a very, very small, little nitpicking thing on my part. But I didn't like the fact that she acknowledged it, but I do like the fact that Bayley got the biggest pop of the night. That just shows you a couple things. It shows that everybody that watches NXT, pretty much everybody in that arena watch NXT at some point or another. So... that's good news for Bayley going forward, but they did say it was her only a one-off appearance, if you will. So then I think they did the right thing by having Sasha Banks get the win on Charlotte, having her making the champion tap out. Even though I'm usually not for champions losing non-title matches, I think that was the right call in this case.
Yeah, I think that was the right move, and I think we both kind of predicted that Sasha should win the match for her team and then earn a title shot. We thought the title shot would come at SummerSlam, but as we'll get to in a little bit when we start talking about Raw, that actually came the next night on the first episode of Raw after the brand split. So,
yeah, that was an interesting call. But I liked the match. I feel like a lot of people were a little higher on this match than I were, than you and I were together.
Yeah, I was a little, I mean, I didn't think it was bad by any means.
Middle of the road.
I think we talked about it, you know, before coming on air, and just Dana Brooke is just not ready to be in a mix with the other three of those women.
No, she's not.
So there's just that, spots in there that make it drag it down for me from where, when she was involved. So
yeah, and that says something that she can't, I mean, you have to just be good enough to not mess things up when you're surrounded by three very talented women like Sasha, Bailey, and Charlotte. And I feel like she's just too green. She's too stiff. There's a lot of room for improvement. And I'm not knocking her because it is not her fault. She was brought up way too early. She didn't even have a good run in NXT before she got to the main roster.
She was injured for a long time.
She was injured, yeah. I mean, there are people like, I honestly think Billie Kay and Blue Pants are...
You're big on the Blue Pants.
I'm big on the Blue Pants. I really am.
Who's the other girl? Pants drops.
Billie Kay, Blue Pants, and the other girl from NXT, I can't remember.
Deonna Purrazzo?
And no, there's one more. The other Australian girl. Anyway, but all I'm saying is, I mean, they brought Dana Brooke up because of her look, because she's kind of built like a Beth Phoenix thing.
And they're going to stick her with Emma, I think, was the original idea.
Yes, that's what it was.
Because they were together in NXT.
Yeah, and maybe because Emma got hurt.
Emma is injured.
She's injured.
I think she got injured right after Dana Brooke came to the main roster.
I guess they were kind of screwed, and they're like, uh-oh, now we have to put Dana by herself. But you're right, it was a pretty rough outing for Dana Brooke, and I think it brought down the whole match.
Yeah.
So it was average. It was average, but you know, the Bailey factor, and I think it was a great idea to have them come out. The first match in the card really got a good pop, and you know, it started the crowd off hot. It was a good crowd too. Where were they? DC?
DC.
Yeah, good job on them. Second match was the Wyatt family versus the New Day. Was this the first time? This is the first time they've been together in the ring, right? And since the...
Correct. They were only on the Wyatt family compound prior to this.
Yeah. And then that was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago?
I don't know which one. It was about 2 or 3 weeks
ago. Yeah. And then... But then it was very strange to me because they had the Wyatt family compound match. And then the next week, the New Day came out like nothing had happened. To me, it was a little bit of a lack of continuity in the storylines there. But... I think you and I predicted this one pretty dead on, was that the Wyatt family was going to get the win. Although now that the, you know, with the splitting up of the Wyatt family, it's a little bit something different. But still, the Wyatt family beat the New Day. And I don't know, knowing that the New Day was going to stay as a team, I think the Wyatt family could have taken a loss here as long as it wasn't Bray Wyatt, to not hurt their credibility.
Yeah, I mean, they should... do things like that. I mean, the New Day, just because it's non-title doesn't mean that a New Day automatically should lose, right? That's just how it works, I guess.
All the time.
But that's not how it should work. They should not have lost, I've brought it up before, they should not have lost to the League of Nations at WrestleMania, especially when...
Speaking of things you're big on, you're big on that League of Nations loss.
Not big on... Yeah, that one really sticks in my craw. League of Nations broke up a couple weeks later. Like, New Day was the champs. They've been a hot act for well over a year. Like, they deserved a win at WrestleMania. It just doesn't make sense. So, same thing here. Wyatt family is essentially split up. Braun Strowman's on Raw. Bray Wyatt is on SmackDown. Eric Rowan's on SmackDown, but Rowan is not going to be a featured player. So, Bray's going to be a single by himself, probably. At least that's how it looked after tonight. So, there was no reason why the New Day couldn't win here and pin Eric Rowan and just kind of go on with their life. I mean, we both predicted the Wyatts would win, but it just, I don't know, I would have had New Day win. But the match wasn't bad. It was fine. They played off the storyline with Bray and Xavier Woods being scared of him. They paid it off at the end where Woods kind of snapped back into things and tried to beat up Bray and ended up taking the loss anyway. So,
and he was, I mean, if you're going to pin somebody from the New Day, I think Woods is the right guy to do it because it did follow storyline. But I agree with you. I mean, the New Day deserved the win there, but... It is what it is, and I guess we'll see what, you know, is in store for those guys on the other shows. Next was Rusev against Zack Ryder. Again, another middle-of-the-road match. Nothing really surprised me. You know, we both predicted Rusev getting the win. And status quo, he should not have lost to Zack Ryder. I mean, Zack, you already knew Zack Ryder already got his feel-good moment at WrestleMania. I didn't think they were going to give him another one. So,
yeah, I agree. They, you know, Ryder and Rusev put on a good match. It was solid. I mean, again, all these first three matches we're talking, they're all 7 or 8 minutes long, so they're not very lengthy by any means. They're probably matches that you could stick on Raw or SmackDown and, you know, get away with it. So it was, I guess in that regard, it was fine for what it was. You know, Rusev was the favorite. The only thing of note really happened after the match, you know, if you consider this something of note, when Rusev was attacking Ryder after the match, Mojo Rawley came out and helped Zack Ryder.
Is that going to say... wait, are Rusev and Mojo on the same?
No.
No,
Mojo and Ryder are on SmackDown, right. Yes. Rusev is on Raw.
Didn't really make much sense there.
No. And they didn't even do anything, right? Like, Mojo just came out and stared at him, and then Rusev left.
That's,
there was nothing. There was no contact.
Talk about getting to the meat and potatoes of the card, and what is probably in the running for match of the year is something. I mean, we all saw coming. Sami Zayn defeated. I shouldn't say we saw coming, but we knew this was going to be a great match. Sami Zayn defeated Kevin Owens cleanly in an awesome back and forth match, brutal, hard hitting, real strong style match, marred by maybe one or two instances which kind of pulled it away from that 5-star rating. You know. Sami Zayn tried a... I don't even know what do you call that? It's a moonsault to the outside. Christopher Daniels does it all the time. You know, he's standing on the ropes. He drops down. He springboards off the ropes backwards. And Sami Zayn, I think, overshot it or undershot it and almost piledrove himself directly down on the apron. It was a scary spot. Owens went to save him, and Sami Zayn kind of fell on his shoulder. And then I'll tell you, the genius of both guys is... that as soon as that happened, then Sami Zayn landed on his bad shoulder. I'm sure Kevin Owens made sure he was okay. And then they immediately made that a focal point of the match. I thought that was phenomenal on-the-fly psychology, terminology. Ring psychology, I should say. And as soon as he fell, Owens grabbed Sami's arm and he wrapped it across the ring post twice. And I thought that was just such... genius, you know, to be able to do that. Like, okay, listen, we messed this up. Let's make something out of it. And then they put on one hell of a match. What did you think of that match?
It was good. You know, I mean, like you said, that one spot kind of...
I feel like you undersold it. I feel like I'm selling it, and you say it was good. Now looking at Jabroni.
Jabron? No, it was very good. It was a very good match. They, like you said, the one botch spot was just kind of a dark spot on it, but not a huge deal, obviously, in the grand scheme of things. Like you said, also, they worked it into the match to the point where I was starting to question whether it was whether he botched it on purpose.
I actually did the same thing, and that's how you know they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So they built it really well. I think the best part of it was, obviously, there's near falls at the end that they were doing a good job with, but the story of they kind of built this one up a little bit more in terms of their history and the hatred they have for each other and the personal issue between them. And there was some stuff going on towards the end of the match of, you know, Owens telling Zayn to stay down. They were smacking each other in the face, and then Zayn ended up hitting him with two haluva kicks at the end to really put him away. So it was pretty hard hitting. He did a brainbuster on the apron. I think Zayn did a brainbuster on the apron to Owens.
It was such a clean brainbuster. It was perfect.
It was a lot of good stuff. So, like you said, it's up there for top matches of the year so far. It's worth going out of your way to see. You know, definitely the best match on this show.
Did the right guy win?
I don't think so, but I'm not going to go crazy over the fact that Zayn won. I mean, it's fine that he wins. He can use victories. I'm used to him losing, so I wouldn't have gotten upset if he lost here. I felt like Owens needs to be pushed stronger for the position that he should be in, but I don't know what their plans for him are at this point. It seems like they're keeping both of these guys around the same level. So I guess
I'll disagree with you. I think the right guy definitely did win here, because it seems like every time Kevin Owens loses a high profile match, he comes back stronger, more determined, and put into a bigger feud. So I think as a heel, he can afford the loss. And I think Sami Zayn going into Monday Night Raw, there's a crowded heap at the top, and a win over Kevin Owens is a good start to his new run. So I thought, like I said, the match was almost flawless. It was a great match, but for my money, I think Sami Zayn, like you said, you are, as I am, so used to him losing, it's almost debilitating. So to see him get a good win on a big stage, I thought it was really good. This is going to bother me. But now it led into Natalya defeating Becky Lynch via submission. I have a couple of issues with this. I don't know really where to begin. The main issue I have is that Becky Lynch was taken higher in the draft than she was taken higher than Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Anderson and Gallows, and Enzo and Cass, among other people, right? So you draft her that high, and you expect her to be a big player. And then what does she do? Literally the match before the new era starts, she jobs to Natalya, who's lost 50 or 60 matches in a row. That's literally exactly how I feel. It's a carousel in the Divas division at this point. But Natalya needed a win. Don't get me wrong. She's got a new heel persona, but she shouldn't have gotten a win at the expense of Becky Lynch, somebody who they're trying to push to be a new legitimate title contender.
Yeah, I mean, what they should have done was have Natalya get wins on either Raw or SmackDown to build up herself as a threat. That way, when Becky beats her on the pay-per-view, it means more. Because Natalya actually would have been on a roll, and people would have thought she had momentum. And then, you know, Becky, who, if their plan is to feature her as the top women's wrestler on SmackDown, you can give her a win over, you know, Natalya, who does have some credibility from her past, but also would have been, you know, maybe defeating other second-tier women's wrestlers on TV for a couple of weeks until...
You have Paige, who's now a second-tier. You have Summer Rae. I mean, there are people that you can give Natalya clean wins over that... To get her, you know, her heat, I should say, but going into the match, so it didn't really make much sense to me. And then, not to spoil SmackDown, which I'm sure you just saw, Becky Lynch got her clean win over Natalya on SmackDown. It just
very lazy booking.
Very, very lazy. You could have done, I don't know. You could have had even Natalya beat Becky Lynch maybe via nefarious means on Raw. A couple, maybe like a week or two ago, and then have her challenge with her rematch. Becky's done the better woman. You cheated, blah, 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 blah. That tells a story. But instead, you get this. And I believe Natalya beat Becky clean, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
she tapped to the sharpshooter.
Yeah, so what? Why was she given a rematch? Any idea? I don't have an idea.
Lazy booking.
I wonder if Vince Russo has an idea. That's going to lead us into... you know what? I'm tapping out of this match, and you could talk about this.
I have to talk about Miz versus Daniel. You have
to talk about this pile of chihuahua dung.
We should really go over this stuff before the show, because I don't know how I keep getting stuck with all the crap that I have to...
What? No, I gave you the good one before.
So, this was an Intercontinental title match. The Miz, who's now on SmackDown, versus Darren Young, who's on Raw.
Oh my god, who the hell cares?
This match was dead on arrival.
Yeah.
From the start of it, there was no heat. The match was average at best in terms of the way that it was worked. The storyline at the end was Bob Backlund, I don't know what you want to call it, firing up and getting somewhat involved in with Maurice slapping him, and he tried to rip his shirt off, and he couldn't get his shirt off because he had suspenders on, and there was a double count out, or I don't know, man. It was not good. It was bad. Not good. Not a good match. Not a good heat. Not a good finish. Just not good overall. So,
Natalya and Becky managed to get more heat following a Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens match than The Miz and Darren Young did in their whole match, which really says something.
Double DQ, excuse me, was the official finish for that match. So, yeah, nothing there. And then
green jacket, gold jacket. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, there's nothing there. And then these guys are on separate shows. So Miz is on SmackDown and Young is on Raw. So they won't be rematching. Thank goodness. From here. And, I mean, the only good thing that comes out of it is that Miz gets to keep the Intercontinental title for a little longer, which I thought he's been doing a nice job this summer carrying that title in his performance in the ring and in promos. So I'm glad that he's going to keep it. But other than that, yeah, no, that's really all. The next match was the six-man tag, which was John Cena, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass versus The Club, Styles, Anderson, and Gallows.
Enzo absolutely murdered it in the pre-match promo. That guy, I don't know how much longer he's going to be Big Cass's tag team partner, because even JBL, I don't know if you picked up on this, JBL said, boy, when Enzo and Cass are done tag teaming, Cass is going to have a long singles career ahead of him. What? I don't even... That is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Like, How do you, like, I can't stand, the commentary has been very, very tough to listen to, but how do you say that? I just don't, I'm getting so flustered trying to describe this. Either one of two things. Either JBL knows that they're going to be eventually Enzo and Cass are either going to split up or Enzo's going to become a manager and they're trying to push Cass down the line. Or he's making that assumption and completely discrediting everything Enzo does. And I think Enzo has gotten a lot better in the ring than he was maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I think he's passable right now. He's with Big Cass. Cass is doing a lot better. I think he's not as green as he was either. And they're good together. But why? Why would you absolutely just completely discredit one of your biggest faces in Enzo and say that, you know?
About Cass?
Yeah.
That's just how they do things. It's not... I don't know if it discredits Enzo too much in the sense that it's just... They see Cass... They always see the big guy as the bigger star. That's just how it works. So that's just how the WWE books things. You know, but... I mean, this match was fine. It just the problem I have with it was I don't need there. I don't know where they're going with the Cena Styles program, or if I assume it's continuing. However, to have Cena pin Styles as the finish of this match just doesn't make sense to me. First of all, if you want to have the faces win, that's okay because the club was splitting apart after the show anyway. But to have Styles be the guy that takes the pin, I don't get that. He's the biggest star of that group. He's the guy they should be spending a lot of time or investing a lot of time in to build him up as a main event player.
He was drafted, you know, second round?
I think it was second round SmackDown. So that's a guy you should be, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense. Like, if you're going to do Cena Styles again, and if you have Cena beat him again, it's nonsensical. So I don't know why. The only reason that I would even be moderately okay with it is if Styles beats Cena clean. One-on-one the next time they wrestle, which I highly doubt that will happen. So I don't like that finish at all. But the match itself was fine. I thought it was
good. Yeah, the match was good. They had the crowd going. Like I said, the crowd was very good. They were into it. And Big Cass had a couple of really cool spots when he tossed Enzo over the top rope. Their kind of back body drop over the top rope move. And then he tossed AJ. And the finish was the John Cena hitting the super-duper attitude adjustment from the top rope or the middle rope, whatever. But you're right. To see AJ get pinned is just so infuriating, especially because AJ pinned Gallows. I'm sorry, Cena pinned Gallows like 2 weeks ago, I think 3 weeks ago. Have Gallows take a pin, you know? Or even, I don't, if you're going to pin somebody in that match, you don't pin AJ Styles. It gets worse for AJ, unfortunately. We'll touch on that. But, you know, that was a good match, you know, a really good match overall, but the finish is just much to be desired. That's going to lead us to the main event, which I am proud to say you and I nailed to a T. Dean Ambrose staying champion, pinning Roman Reigns, and retaining the title. Now, again, a lot of questionable decisions going into this match, as you have Dean Ambrose pin Seth Rollins the Monday before. Or, I'm sorry, Tuesday, right?
Correct, Tuesday before.
The Tuesday before, and then he gets a pin on Roman Reigns after Seth Rollins. I forget the finish. Was a pedigree somewhere, or
this was on SmackDown?
Oh no, I'm sorry, the pay per view.
On the pay per view, yeah, I think Rollins had gotten
who the spear or Superman punch.
Yes,
and then
Ambrose gave dirty deeds to Roman Reigns and pinned him immediately.
He took the clean loss, which, you know, you and I both said he should have. I mean, there were a couple of times during that match I was like, are they really going to put it right back on Roman Reigns? But thankfully they didn't. Dean Ambrose was the right guy to do it. He's, you know, and he got a very, very loud face reaction. And Roman Reigns got the usual chorus of boos. I mean, his boos were, like, worse than they've ever been, which, you know, they should have. But also, Seth Rollins got, there's, like, probably the third biggest babyface reaction of the night, so seems like they're going to have to, you know, make a decision on what they're going to do going forward. But overall, as a whole, what did you think of the pay-per-view?
It was probably, you know, it was a slightly above average show, I thought. So it's probably like a, you know, if I'm grading it on a letter scale, that's what we normally do.
That's right? What we do. So
I would say it's about a B. You know, the Zayn Owens match was very good.
I was just going to say, now, if you were to take out the Zayn Owens match, what would you give it?
I guess I'd probably give it a, I don't know, B minus or something along those lines. Because the six man with the club was good, and the main event was good. The opener was solid, and it was a nice payoff with Bayley. Some of the other matches were fine in terms of their passability, but nothing really stood out as being, you know, a classic aside from Zayn and Owen. So that one kind of pulls it up to like slightly above average level to me as an overall show.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't talk about this beforehand because I don't want to seem like I'm jumping on your bandwagon here. But I also went with a B, which, to be honest, for a WWE event, I don't even know if you call them pay-per-views anymore, is good. I mean, I have no issues with it. You know, it's free on the network, and you did get a lot of good wrestling out of it. So I do give that show a B. Now, that led us into the official first, and it's not Monday Night Raw anymore, the first Raw of the new era. New commentators, new stage. It had that old school, I guess that was not super, maybe it was primetime wrestling feel, no, superstars feel, where there are no more tables at ringside. So now you have...
it's like Nitro.
Yeah, it was very similar to Nitro. That's
well, that's what Bischoff, when Bischoff took over as the general manager of Raw in 2002, I think, after the first brand split, that's what he did. He had the table set back, you know, in towards the back of the arena, I guess towards the entrance way, and kind of raised up a little bit. And they had JR and the King back there, so that was kind of like a Nitro-esque type move, I think, at the time. So that's similar, and like you said, it's not just Nitro. It was like back when, like, they had Superstars or Challenge. They used to have the desk maybe back and raised up.
And even
up.
The pay-per-views, you know, you had Jesse Ventura and Vince McMahon calling it from halfway across the arena.
Right.
So the new commentators for Monday Night Raw are Michael Cole, Byron Saxton, and Corey Graves. I think Corey Graves did an amazing job. Michael Cole's Michael Cole, and Byron Saxton was just... I'm not one to get on announcers, but I thought he was terrible. He made some atrocious analogies that made zero sense. Something I didn't get a chance to watch, you know, Raw with you guys, but I think I texted you. Something about if the WWE were Six Flags Great Adventure, Nia Jax would break every roller coaster. I have no idea what in the darkest of hell that means, but listening to Byron Saxton was very difficult. Corey Graves, on the other hand, the WWE did a great job splitting up Corey Graves and Mauro Ranallo, because they, to me, seem like the two most knowledgeable when it comes to professional wrestling, knowing the moves, knowing the history. So you don't want to put them in the same show, but having Graves on Raw and Mauro on SmackDown gives credence to the other announcers, so they can kind of just let him talk about the wrestling and then they can tell the stories around it. So Byron Saxton, dude needs to go. Leave it to just Cole and Corey Graves and I'll be fine. However, like I said, everything was changed. It was the first night. You had Stephanie and Mick Foley come out, and pretty much the whole crux was, as you said, they're going to need a new champion, right? They're going to need a title, so they made the WWE Universal title. That's the correct name, right?
Correct.
And they had two Fatal 4-Ways, with the two guys winning the Fatal 4-Ways facing off in the main event. The winner of that will then wrestle Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. Who did you think, before anything, who did you think was going to face Rollins at SummerSlam?
So you're saying, like,
before they even announced that the guys...
The eight guys?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know what they were going to do, so I guess I was anticipating Reigns being the guy to get that shot. And I guess they would be facing each other for the vacant championship. Once they announced the participants in the two Fatal 4-Ways, I thought Balor would win and go to the main event.
I did as well, yeah. So, actually, you know, speaking of Balor, now that I look at Battleground, was Cesaro on the card at all?
No. I think he made an appearance on the pre-show. I did not watch the entire pre-show.
Okay.
Not like in a wrestling capacity. I think he was in the panel, and he was doing interviews and stuff like that, kind of doing his new shtick. Disgruntled and wants to wrestle and things of that nature.
Can't say I blame him, but kind of misses Cesaro on Battleground. That's strange. Oh, and that's a lot of stuff going on. But so they know. Forgive me if I don't get the matches correct. It was Kevin Owens, Rusev, Cesaro. The Miz and Cesaro.
Cesaro and Finn Balor.
I'm sorry, Finn Balor. And I thought it was a really good match. I thought it was a strong match. I thought the right guy won with Finn Balor. But, you know, as we talked about before, the main issue I have is you have one other, you know, champion on there. You have Rusev, who's a U.S. Heavyweight Champion. He should not be taking pins. Not only should not be taking pins, we just saw this on SmackDown, but Rusev does not have to be in the match. The U.S. Heavyweight title is a strong enough title in itself that Rusev should be proud to carry that title, which he is. But you don't have to diminish that title by putting him in a match to become the Universal Champion. It's just making the U.S. title look like they're treating it like a piece of crap, like nobody cares about it.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that stuff. I don't. I guess, I mean, I could see the argument of him being worthy of a world championship match, given that he's the U.S. champion. So certainly having involving him in the match, like I can okay with that. But to have him be the guy that takes the pin in that four-way, I don't know why they would do that. I just assumed that that's why Cesaro was in it, to take a pin, or, you know, even Owens to that degree. So again, is it the worst thing in the world? You know, it's just something that bugs me personally, that when they do stuff like that, because I don't like it when champions get pinned unless there's a purpose behind it. It should be rare. So anyway, if Balor won the match, it was like 20 plus minutes. It was very good, and he beat Rusev, so he went to the main event. And the other four way was Sheamus and Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho. And why am I blanking on the last one?
The last one was, it's a good question. That tells you all you need to know about this match. Sami Zayn.
Zayn, right, okay.
Good, sorry.
So, that match was okay as well, not as good as the other four-way. There was a noticeable blown spot with Jericho and Reigns when he went for a Superman punch, and Jericho sold it like a second before he should have went down and just kind of flopped.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Whatever. But Reigns won that match, which was, I guess, kind of predictable. At least we figured Reigns was going to be in the last two guys.
I thought they might go Sami Zayn versus Finn Balor. That would have been something.
That would have been nice. But
really pandered to those internet marks like ourselves.
Yeah. So Reigns won that. It was okay. It wasn't bad. You know, it was a little bit shorter than the first match, but the first four-way, but still fine for what it was. Reigns going over to the finals at least made it interesting in terms of the Balor-Reigns final match, which was the main event for the night. But before we get to that, there's a couple other things that happened on the show. Most notably, they made a women's title match between Charlotte and Sasha Banks that on Raw, so they didn't wait until SummerSlam for the match. I figured or assumed that they were going to go with some sort of a DQ finish there with Dana Brooke or something along those lines to set up a rematch at SummerSlam. They did not do that. They pulled the trigger on the title change on Raw. So I don't know how long they went. I think it was at least 15 minutes, I would say. We could probably go look it up. But they went at least 15 minutes, and Banks won the title cleanly in the middle with her finisher, the Banks statement. So I was surprised that they did the title change. I'm not opposed to the title change. I mean, Banks was the next person in line to win it, and Charlotte had the belt for almost a year. So it's good when you build something up like that, and, you know, then when the champion loses, people are super into it.
Yep.
When
you have somebody they want to see win. Yeah, and the pop that she got when she won.
Yeah, and that's basically what happened, right? They had Banks with somebody that fans wanted to see win it. Charlotte had it for a long time. People wanted to see her lose it. That's basically how you book wrestling, right? And then Banks won. Crowd went crazy. You know, emotional finish, right? Banks was all happy because she won. Charlotte was crying because she lost. Like, it kind of puts over the importance of the championship.
I agree. You know, I think they did a really good job. The crowd went absolutely crazy when Sasha Banks won. I saw a picture of her and Triple H in the back, and Triple H was crying, and everybody was super duper happy. So.
Wuss. What a pansy.
I cried too, man, every time I watched Rudy.
Different. That's Rudy, bro.
It's the ultimate guy
crying. It's like Field of Dreams, okay?
Let me tell you something. Field of Dreams, overrated movie.
We're going to have a talk after this podcast.
And this will be the last episode of the All Night Long Wrestling Podcast. So Sasha Banks wins. Will there be a rematch at SummerSlam? Probably, which will be fine. And I expect Sasha Banks to retain, but Charlotte took the loss really well. She took the Twitter. She said something about Queen's always coming back, and congratulations to Sasha. It was her day, but I'll be back, and that's fine. Again, you said they booked that correctly the entire way through. The crowd got emotionally invested in Sasha. She won the non-title match leading to the title match, and she won. I thought for sure they were going to do it at SummerSlam, but you know what? It wasn't a bad thing to do, and it really showed the importance of the women's title. So it was a nice change of pace, and it's always good to have a title change out of nowhere on a show, especially when you're trying to kick off this new era, this whole anything can happen on Raw, yada, yada, yada. So that was a good job. I was also really pumped to see Neville back. Big Neville fan. It looks like he's going to be the helm of this cruiserweight division. I don't know when the cruiserweight division is going to start. I assume maybe they might wait until the Cruiserweight Classic is over to bring those guys in. I saw they signed, they sent contracts out to Cedric Alexander, Nomdar, and somebody else who I'm currently forgetting. And they said, according to the internet today, what I just read was Zack Sabre Jr. they offered a contract to, but he can't sign until maybe early next year. And it looks like Kota Ibushi is going to be signing pretty soon, and they'll sign Grand Metallic. So they're probably just waiting to get all the Cruiserweight talent in place before they bring up the Cruiserweights to Raw and hopefully make a Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, that match was okay. It was him and Axel, I think. They had a couple of squash matches, which I'm not opposed to, on this show as well. They had Nia Jax win against a local enhancement talent and Braun Strowman as well. Quick squashes for them. Again, those are not bad things. Those are things back from the days of, you know, WWE Superstars and Challenge that we used to watch when we were all kids on Saturdays and Sundays. And you can't really book full wrestling shows like that these days anymore with the ratings and everything that they're trying to do. But to get some guys over and get them wins and make them somewhat credible, that's kind of how you do it. Because then, you know, those guys don't lose for a long time, and it makes it seem like a big deal if and when they do. So they're trying to establish those two individuals as players, so that was fine.
You'll probably see, I would assume, maybe 1 to 2 squash matches per week,
especially on a 3-hour show.
I was just going to say, you figure squash matches 3 maybe 4 minutes with the commercial break, 5 on each side. You're looking at maybe 15-20 minutes for the squash match and that segment. And it's also important to get over the talent's moveset, what to look for, what the finisher is, so you're more emotionally invested in those matches. You know, when you see Nia Jax versus Bayley or Nia Jax versus whoever it might be, what spots to look out for, and when the finish is coming, what are, you know, her main move is, her secondary move. And I think bringing back squash matches is a good idea.
Other than that, I don't think there was too much else. I mean, there's a couple other segments, but nothing really worth discussing. Enzo and Cass won a match. New Day had a promo, and Gallows and Anderson interrupted
Enzo
them.
And Cass won a match against the Colognes. I mean,
the Shining Stars.
The Shining Stars, they're still a thing. They had one match on TV. They had 3 months of segments, one match on TV, and now they're driving. That's tough. That's a tough way to go for the Colon brothers.
So the main event was Balor and Roman Reigns. Sorry.
Don't even care. That's awesome.
That's not much.
Oh, you forgot the Braun Strowman squash.
I mentioned Nia Jax and Braun Strowman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I've never seen the reverse choke slam as a finish.
It's not gonna last.
No, I get that's.
You can't get that on most guys.
No, you can't. That was so. I was, and I
until
guess,
they create a cruiserweight division and Braun Strowman just goes over all of them, then maybe
like a 7-on-1 kind of match.
Yeah,
you know, Braun Strowman's new look. He's no longer like, I guess, a Wyatt family member. Now he's just like they're booking him like the Great Khali. You know, he's picking guys up. And he's when Khali was a heel. So I guess we'll see what happens with him. But go ahead. I'm sorry, I cut you off before you get into the main event.
No, so the final match was Balor and Reigns. So they won the 2 Fatal 4-Ways, and they put on a match again. 15-minute main event, 20-minute main event. A lot of it was Reigns' power game, kind of overpowering Balor. He had a lot of offense. Balor had a nice comeback at the end and won with his finisher. You know, no shenanigans, nothing like that. It was pretty surprising. I think a lot of people were surprised. I thought Balor would win, but. Certainly I understand that you kind of assume at this point until something happens that the Reigns push is just kind of keep going and going and going around the title, and now they're scaling back on it a bit. I have to imagine that's because of the failed drug test that he had, the suspension. But, you know, Balor won, so Balor goes on to face Rollins at SummerSlam for the new Universal Championship or whatever it is, and that's a nice, new, fresh matchup. Those guys are both great athletes and wrestlers. I'd have to go back and look and see if they've a history together with wrestling each other. I don't know. I don't believe they crossed paths in NXT, but I don't know if they've crossed paths on the indie circuit at all. We can always look that up, but that should be a good, nice, fresh main event for WWE at SummerSlam. So I was certainly pleasantly surprised that that was the direction that they went for the main event for the title.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, I think they're going to have a phenomenal tear the house down match together. And I don't know if they're going to put the title on Balor right away, unless they do something. I mean, the way I don't want to, you know, book SummerSlam, which is over a month away, but I think you can go one of two ways. You could do a double turn all in one night. You could have the club come out, support Finn, or you could have Rollins say he doesn't want help from Stephanie or so-and-so, win the match, lose the match, go to shake Finn's hand, Rollins goes face, Finn goes heel, and then all of a sudden you continue getting your face pop for Rollins, and now you have a super-duper badass heel stable with Finn in the club. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with that.
I think more likely would be, my guess would be Reigns turning on Balor and costing him the title, and maybe Rollins winning it that way. Because they did a little post-match promo, right, with Reigns after he lost, and he said that he respected Balor and he wanted to see him again at some point. So I would think that maybe they're planting a seed there for Roman to do something along those lines. That's my guess at this time. Okay. But I don't know. We'll see where they go with that. I agree with you that they may not put the title on Balor right away, although I wouldn't mind it if they did. But I can certainly see, you know, wanting them to put something on Rollins because he's had it before, a little more established. We'll see what they do.
He's never had the Universal title before, bro. This is totally different. This is a title for the people.
I can't wait to see how terrible the title looks when it comes out, right?
I hope it's a spinner belt.
It's going to be terrible.
I hope it's a spinner belt.
It's not good.
Speaking of terrible, we just finished the initial inaugural SmackDown Live. Disappointed is an understatement. I don't even...
It was bad news bears, bro.
It was bad news all around. They were doing something...
Bad news Brown.
Bad news Allen. We can't say the other one. Brown. I don't think. Can you say that?
Like, no, I don't... I feel like we should move on.
Let's keep going. They started with a weird promo with Shane and Daniel Bryan walking from the back to the ring. Yada, yada, yada. Long story short, they announced a six-pack challenge for in the main event. The winner of the six-pack challenge wrestles Dean Ambrose at SummerSlam.
Summerfest.
Who said it? Was that Mike Adamley? No, who said Summerfest?
That's Jeremy Piven, actually.
Jeremy Piven. He just... What a douche he is. It was Dolph Ziggler, John Cena, Bray Wyatt, Baron Corbin, AJ Styles, and Apollo Crews. And Apollo Crews got the sixth spot in the six-pack challenge because he won the Battle Royal. The Battle Royal had everybody else on the roster in there. I thought it was either going to be Kane or Del Rio. Baron Corbin winning it, which was fine. The Battle Royal was okay. It was a standard Battle Royal. They're all pretty much the same to me. Next match was Becky Lynch and Natalya, which we had just talked about. We literally just saw at Battleground, and now Becky Lynch gets her win on the big show, SmackDown.
SmackDown Live.
She gets her big win on SmackDown Live. Woo! And after that, they had a weird promo with... who came out? I can't even remember all of them.
Well, are you talking about the Miz TV segment?
Oh, was that Miz? No. Didn't they have all the divas come out?
Oh, all the divas that came out. Yeah, so they had Alexa Bliss came out, and Eva Marie came out, and Carmella came out. And it was basically like, I guess, the SmackDown women's division was what that was all about there. But they didn't really go anywhere. They just kind of all...
And they just cut off.
Cut a little promo, and they just stopped. Yeah, so it was...
And the big payoff to that was Eva Marie.
Yeah.
You know how much I love Eva Marie.
I don't have anything to say about that.
Nope,
oh, don't forget about Naomi, bro. I'm sorry.
She came back. No problem with Naomi, but that segment, there was no... I fully expected Daniel Bryan to come out and say, you know, we value women's wrestling as much as Raw does. We're going to make a new women's title, and there can be a tournament with the finals of the tournament being at SummerFest. No, he didn't say that. It just kind of ended after Eva Marie walked out, and there was some weird talking going on. I wasn't paying attention, so. I think, unless they talk about that next week on SmackDown, I feel like they lost an opportunity. But when you think about it, if they're going to do a tournament or anything like that, now that the shows are split, you're only going to have three more episodes of SmackDown to the view. Oh, no, four. When's
21st, I think, is SummerSlam.
21st, nice. You're only going to have three. You have one, two... Yeah, three more episodes of SmackDown. So I wonder if that's going to cause them to speed up some storylines or try to fit more into each episode, but it was really a very, very...
Oh, certainly, they certainly had no interest in putting American Alpha on this show.
No, that can wait until next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is...
That's great.
Absolutely insane to me.
Big fan.
And then they also announced Shelton Benjamin resigned, so he's going to be on the show. No issues with that. Alex says Shelton Benjamin. He's the recipient of probably one of the greatest super kicks of all time against your boy Shawn Michaels on Raw that many years back. And he's a little bit old. He's Brock Lesnar's age. You know, he came in with Brock Lesnar. He was signed by Jim Ross, and he did a lot of good things with the world's greatest tag team. And then he wrestled, he was in Ring of Honor for a while, and he's been in Pro Wrestling Noah, still doing his thing. He's, you know, still in great shape, and I have no issues in bringing back Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah, and I have to jump around on the show a little bit, but they also had, so they sort of played off the whole thing with Heath Slater was the only wrestler not drafted last week during the draft, so he came out and just cut a promo about how he should be signed to SmackDown and all this type of stuff, and, Rhino ended up coming back. Rhino's been jumping back and forth between NXT and the main roster for the last year or so. So now he's on SmackDown, apparently, and he speared Heath Slater in that segment. So it was just a general segment there. They had a Miz TV segment with Randy Orton, which is basically, as you described, a carbon copy of what they did with the highlight reel on Sunday at Battleground.
The same jokes, the same everything. I was waiting for Randy Orton to make a joke about how Brock Lesnar tested positive twice for steroids.
And then he could easily retort with how Randy Orton tested positive.
I think it might be three times.
To the point where they changed the wellness policy so that Orton could not get fired. That's pretty much, I think, how it went.
Yeah.
That led to Orton and Miz in a non-title match. Pretty weird match, I think. It was Miz working over Orton's shoulder.
The problem with this match that you pointed out was Randy Orton's tan. Randy Orton had less of a tan than Trevor Murdoch.
That's not a lot.
That's not a lot.
It's not a good tan.
Zero dimes in that tan. That tan. Oh, he looks so weird. Like you said that to me, and I was like, oh my god, he doesn't look right. I want more tans and tribal tattoos, Randall. Come on, get more weird skull tattoos to cover up nothing.
So yeah, that match was basically, I don't know, 5-6 minutes of Miz working over Orton's shoulder, and then Orton hit an RKO quote out of nowhere end quote. And basically sat in the ring for like 2 minutes straight, watching, like was just waiting there doing nothing. Miz got back up, he hit him with another one a couple of minutes later, that's not an exaggeration, and then pinned him in the middle of the clean. So that was a little bit strange.
To put in perspective what you were saying, the match was 4 minutes and 22 seconds long.
Okay.
He at least sat there for 90 seconds.
Yeah, minimum.
Yeah minimum of 90 seconds. So it was just, Randy Orton took a bump on the outside where he fell directly on his shoulder. And then he screamed, S-word, and they bleeped it out. And then he screamed, F-word, and they bleeped that out. And then Miz worked over the arm. It makes me wonder if there was an actual injury in that match, now that I think about it. Orton did really hurt his shoulder.
I don't know. I mean, I
that would explain it, because that was just so odd, like you said.
I hope not for his sake, because Miz was definitely working it over pretty good. I'd like to think that he would be in a lot of pain. Maybe, I don't know, you never know with that. He did hurt it taking out the trash, so...
When did he do he heard it when he was wrestling John Cena and he was slamming the mat that many years back?
Yes, that happened. So that was that. And then they did the six pack challenge main event. I guess the match itself was fine. Overshadowed to me with anger of,
do you want me to put 60 seconds on the clock and you could tell me why I'm tight this week?
No, it's just, I don't have to, I can't.
We've said it time and time again, but Joe, take the floor. Tell us why you're mad.
I just don't know. So the finish of the match was, so there's two problems. And this can be debated. I'm sure people out there would debate me if they were listening or we were having a discussion about it. So Dolph Ziggler won the match. So Dolph Ziggler is the number one contender for the WWE Championship, and he's fighting Dean Ambrose at SummerSlam. So that's problem A.
Soak that in, SmackDown Live audience.
So of the six guys in that match, I would almost argue that he was probably the sixth guy that I would have wanted to see win and fight Dean Ambrose. I would have rather seen Ambrose Cena. I would have rather seen Ambrose Styles, Ambrose Corbin, Ambrose Cruz, and Ambrose Wyatt. I would have rather watched all of those matches than Ambrose Ziggler.
Yeah.
Regardless,
yep.
They have Dolph Ziggler win and get put into a main event spot after he's been in a mid-card at best role for a couple of years straight, including losing to Baron Corbin multiple times on pre-shows.
Thank you. Like, I can't tell you the last time Dolph Ziggler won a match.
It's very, very few and far between. So that's the first problem. The second problem is he pinned AJ Styles with a superkick. I don't know why AJ Styles keeps getting pinned in these matches or keeps losing. This is a six-man match. There's six men in the match. Five guys could take a loss.
There's four of the guys that could have been pinned in that match.
Yes. Four other guys. If they're really going to go with Ziggler. Yeah. But first of all, AJ should have won. But if they want to do Styles and Cena again, that's fine. You could have had Cruz take the pin. You could have had Corbin take the pin. You could have had Wyatt take the pin. Or you could have put somebody else in the match, like Del Rio, to take the pin. That would have been a lot better than what we got, which was Styles losing via superkick to Dolph Ziggler. And now Dolph Ziggler is in the title match at Stupid Summerfest.
You see 400 superkicks a night now. You literally see so many superkicks. The Young Bucks have reinvented the superkick to the point where it's a transitional move, like a hip toss. And you have AJ Styles, the number one heel on your show, lose clean to a superkick in a six-man match. Who booked that? I want to meet the agent for that match. I want you to break down what you were thinking when you booked that match. That sucked.
Highly questionable.
Highly questionable.
So I guess needless to say, the booking of Raw and the way that show played out versus the booking of SmackDown, how that show played out, for me personally, were very night and day. You know, yeah. Raw had both shows had new sets. Both shows had new entrances. They had different ring ropes. One had red, one had blue. They had different opening videos, different songs, like stuff like that. So there was different look and feel to both shows, which they desperately needed to do for both. That was very good, a very good decision that they made. But the way that Raw was laid out, with like no talking segments, like I mentioned it to Brian last night, we were watching the show. I believe there was only one segment on the show with Stephanie and Mick, and it was the first 10 minutes, and that was it. There was not a lot of backstage stuff. As opposed to SmackDown, there was a lot of Shane and D-Bry. Now, those guys are much more likable characters, but still, you don't need... SmackDown was supposed to be the show that wasn't about the authority figures, and Shane was on the show at least like 3 or 4 times.
Right. Compared to 2 or 3 weeks ago, where you were watching SmackDown to get the wrestling matches, and you're watching Raw to get your storylines and your BS, if you will. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason for it, or if they just want Stephanie McMahon to succeed so bad and bury Shane. I don't know what it is. But I will give SmackDown until SummerSlam before SmackDown becomes the way SmackDown was, and I'll catch it if I can. I had such high hopes for SmackDown Live. It's a little bit of an older show, you know, helmed by John Cena and Randy Orton, but you have so much talent on that show. You have Bray Wyatt, you have guys like Apollo Crews, you have American Alpha, hell, you even have Baron Corbin. You have these guys that really just came from NXT not too long ago. They have a lot of potential, and you're giving us very, very questionable decisions left and right. And as far as the Divas match, you know, there's some talent in the Divas division over there, and there's a lot of Divas in that division who I don't think really should be featured. You know, you can leave it to Natalya, and you can leave it to Becky Lynch, but I need... there needs to be a rhyme or reason as to why these girls are fighting, why these girls are talking, and right now you don't have it. So now you're not going to find out for another 7 days from now if what's going to lead to anything, who's the face, who's the heel. You want to push Alexa Bliss, that's fine, but you're going to need more than one segment with 8 divas in 1 7-minute segment or 8-minute segment. I know it's tough to do in only a 2-hour show, but maybe less Shane McMahon or something like that. But there's no tag team titles.
Right.
There wasn't a tag team match on the show, right?
No. American Alpha is next week.
So are there going to be a special attraction where it's just going to be American Alpha versus Breezango, right?
Breezango, the Usos are on that show as well.
Yeah.
I think Vaudevillains, possibly.
Yeah, Vaudevillains are on there too. And I just read that the Dudleys re-signed today.
Yeah. They're Raw competitors, I believe.
Yeah. So very, very strange. You don't establish a tag team division. You don't establish a women's division. And you have your Intercontinental Champion lose in 4 minutes. Right.
So I would say, and I don't know when the ratings will come out for this stuff, or if that's even really going to, if the ratings are going to reflect, you know, what people really think of these shows. I mean, it's the only difference between the two shows is one of them's on Monday night for 3 hours, and the other one's on Tuesday night for 2 hours. But other than that, they're just the same with split rosters. You know, week one, I would say, goes clearly to Raw as far as what the better show was.
It might be 2-0 with how bad SmackDown was. Yeah. It's 2-0 now.
It was a 10-8 round.
Yeah, it might be a 10-7 round. Ugh. So, I, you know, we'll tune in. There's still NXT tomorrow night. There's NXT tomorrow night.
And the Cruiserweight Classic after that.
The Cruiserweight Classic. Then you have Impact on Thursday.
Impact on Thursday.
Thank God there's no wrestling on Friday. Is there wrestling on Saturday? No. And there's no wrestling on Sunday. So you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If you're a wrestling fan, that's a lot of wrestling.
It helps get through the week, the work week, that's for sure.
It does. I guess, you know what? If you're looking at it like that, it does really help you get through the work week.
That's what we need.
Did anything else happen this week that you want to talk about? I mean, this was a very WWE-centric show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we're doing this on Tuesday. Normally we come in on Thursdays and do these, so... I think that's the focus. I mean, this is it's a fresh week for them. You know, they had the pay per view on Sunday. They've got the brand split shows, the first editions of the brand split shows, and
inaugural editions. That sounds right.
New era.
New era. Ushering in a new era. The ruthless aggression.
We'll see. We'll see what they do. I mean, I thought Raw was good. I thought SmackDown was not good. Raw is a tougher show to fill 3 hours with. So let me see if they can keep that up. You know, week after week. So we'll see what happens next week with them.
Quick before we go, grade for Raw.
It's an A for me. A flat A.
Holy smokes. That's the first time the Stallion's ever given an A. Grade for SmackDown.
C.
Wow, you are much, much nicer. SmackDown got a D for me.
A D.
A D for damn it, I can't believe I just watched that. A D for...
I'm going to delete it off my DVR.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you have it on your DVR, feel free to delete that. I wish I could give it an E for Eli Drake, because you're so high on Eli Drake.
A D for dummy, right?
And there it is. That's a circle of life we were talking about before. I'm going to give Raw an A-, and I'm going to give SmackDown a limp D. And on that note... He is the Stallion. I am the Enforcer. This is the All Night Long Wrestling Podcast. We are tapping out.